Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Hello, fans. It's Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, registered sports dietitian and your host of this podcast, Female Athlete Nutrition. My guest today is a fellow sports dietitian and a fellow runner and lover of all things running, Megan Featherston of Featherstone Nutrition. I'm super excited to chat with her. We talk about her background as a dietitian, how she got into running, and then we do a deep dive on carbohydrate loading and also hydration and electrolyte needs specifically for marathon runners. So I really wanted to dial this episode into the fueling tactics that marathon runners can use to fuel their run. And Megan is the perfect person to have this conversation with. Before we dive into that, I want to remind you of an amazing company, Prevnex. I am an affiliate for them and a user of their multivitamin and joint health supplement. Their joint health supplement truly has impacted my life. I do have arthritis in my toes and in my fingers. And regarding running, I feel that in my toes, and taking the joint health supplement has helped me. You can use the code RISEUP for 15% off at www.prevenex.com. That's P-R-E-V-I-N-E-X, Prevenex. They have a plethora of different dietary supplements. I'm just telling you that my personal favorite that I personally use and impact my life is a multivitamin, as I've gone through various different life circumstances and I focus on whole foods, but that multivitamin is just something that's kind of helped me when I'm having the off day, the off week, or feel that I'm not 100% confident in my nutrition, and I keep working on that, but the multivitamin is a little bit of a catch-all. It's really high quality. And the joint health supplement, I feel the difference. I've been taking it for about 2 years now, and I've got my husband on it too. As we continue to age and still challenge our bodies physically, we need to keep our joints strong. So Prevnex.com, use the code RISEUP for 15% off. Now let's get into the conversation with Megan. A little bit of a background first. Megan received her Master's of Science in Nutrition from Miami University, and as her career as a dietitian took off, she just kind of felt like something was missing. You know, she was an athlete as a child, and as she kind of dove into work and adulthood, she was missing that thrill of competition. So in 2009, she signed up for her first marathon, I believe her first road race ever, the Cleveland Marathon, and she crossed that finish line in a time of 3 hours and 58 minutes. And that was enough to hook her in for good. Over the years, she continued to train. She became a lover of the marathon, and she's actually brought her PR down to 2 hours and 49 minutes, over an hour of an improvement. And that's thanks to her consistent training, keeping it fun, and dialing in her sports nutrition, which became her new passion. She started off as a clinical dietitian. So for the last 6 years, Megan has obtained her certified specialist in sports dietetics and has become a sports dietitian. And she now has her practice helping runners and endurance athletes fuel their biggest, baddest goals. Megan specializes in sports performance nutrition and has a heavy background in clinical so that she can help athletes manage whatever their medical conditions might be and understand their own health history and lab work, kind of bringing it all together with clinical nutrition, health, and a passion to fuel your body for the run and the long run. You can find Megan on Instagram at Featherstone Nutrition. That's Feather, F-E-A-T-H-E-R, Stone, S-T-O-N-E, Nutrition. And her website, featherstonenutrition.com, which is jam-packed with tons of helpful information, some of which we'll get into today, her carb loading calculator and her hydration calculator.
Megan, thank you so much for joining. And I'm super excited just to get to know you more since I've, you know, been following you on social for a while, and which is always fun. But it's like, I feel like I know someone when I don't. So I'm really excited to get to know you a little bit more and converse today.
Same. I'm happy to be here. And it's always good to get two sports dietitians together, you know, unite.
Yeah. Yes, exactly, exactly. And so with that being said, like, I invited you on the podcast because I feel like we're on the same page with a lot of things. So I think this will be a helpful conversation for our listeners. At the same time, you have different specialties and a unique story and provide a different service too. Could you share with our listeners just a little bit about like how you came to become a dietitian and then how running became such a passion in your personal life?
Yeah, and they kind of go hand in hand in a very obscure way, but so I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my life. And I actually stumbled upon a brochure for dietetics when I was touring for colleges. I thought I wanted to do something in the medical field. And I was also very passionate about exercise science and nutrition. So when I stumbled on this pamphlet, and it was like all the same science classes that you would take in like a medical degree, plus nutrition, plus exercise science labs, I was like, this sounds amazing. And I got like super excited to like actually learn in college and go to these things. So I just decided I'd try it out and clearly stuck with it and clearly continued to love it. So really honestly stumbled upon it and then thought I would work in a hospital forever. I come from a medical family. You know, that's where I was for 12 years of my career, was in clinical, then kind of more of a wellness type clinical role, but all with the hospital system. And then within that time, got very bored with not striving for a goal, no longer in a master's program, no longer in my dietetic internship. You probably had similar feelings. So I was like, I'm going to run
just a marathon. Just doing life.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I was like, what sounds tricky? A marathon. I'd never run a race in my life, not a 5K, not a 10K. So signed up for a marathon because I like a little bit of a challenge and not sure if I could accomplish it. So that was in 2009, was the first marathon I ran. And then that's what's, you know, piqued my interest in sports nutrition. I took a great class in my master's program before that on sports nutrition. So I had a little bit of interest, but diving into and making all those mistakes myself, I was like, there's got to be a better way. You know, so pulling research articles, learning more about the science behind sports nutrition and why I was feeling certain ways and what I could do to fix it and how I could help my performance. So I kind of used myself as a guinea pig. And then fast forward 10 years later, and I had a private practice and quit my clinical job 2 years after that.
I love that. I love that you have that experience of, you know, kind of maybe doing things wrong or learning the mistakes as many marathoners do, because it's a long race and a lot can happen with your nutrition and fueling throughout the training and the race. So you have that experience. And I think the 12 years of clinical just makes you such a well-rounded dietitian. You know, I'm a sports dietitian, so it's awesome to specialize in that. But, you know, you're going to have people who run marathons, who have medical conditions, who have different backgrounds, who have celiac, who have lupus, whatever. And it's like, you need to, you have those, that experience as a clinical dietitian to handle all of that.
Right.
And actually, I think that's actually in the marathoning world, there's so many, anybody, it sounds crazy because a marathon is so hard. At the same time, anybody can run a marathon. You know, it is such a hobby, a goal like you did. You were just like, it's life. Like, I want a goal to strive for. And you've got so many different people who take on that challenge. So I think fueling properly for it is huge because it's, you know, we're not everybody who runs a marathon is an elite level athlete. And so you have so much background to help support them.
Right, right. And I just had a client this week that I've worked with for years that's a marathon runner that was diagnosed at over 40 with type 1 diabetes. And it was like, I was so helpful or hope, you know, happy that I had that old clinical knowledge to pull from to really support her in ways that if I didn't have that, I probably couldn't, you know? So yeah, I totally agree. I love, wouldn't change the progression of, you know, the career at all, because I do think we learn so much in different environments and atmospheres. Yeah.
And then you have your CSSD as well.
Correct.
So that's awesome. Like, from a career standpoint, you actually went and pursued to get that sports dietitian title, get that extra training too, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So, and then you personally with your marathons too, I mean, that what a journey it's been. You're incredibly fast, Megan.
I haven't always been.
Right. And well, that isn't that the, such the fun thing about marathons? Like, you got hooked and you kept getting faster and faster and faster. So it's been how many, 10, 14 years of marathoning now? Or
Yeah. Yeah. 14, yeah. 15, going on 15. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Took a big break. Took like 7 years off in there to have some foot surgery and kids. So I did have a solid chunk in there that I wasn't running marathons, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Mm-hmm. And so something that I think is cool about your journey too, you know, I've talked to on this podcast, I've talked to lots of distance runners, marathoners, ultra marathoners. I've talked to like elite athletes and things like that. And I hope you don't take offense to this. I don't think you will, but you are somebody who, you know, you're not the elite athlete. You're just somebody who wanted to have a goal in life and you did it. And throughout the years, you've gotten quite fast, impressively fast. But kind of what you're doing is you're chasing your goals, right? You're chasing your time, and what you're doing right now is you're chasing the world major marathons. Mm-hmm. And I would just love to have you share that with our listeners, maybe somebody else who's getting into marathoning and like doesn't really know what that is yet. Like, what are the major marathons? What makes them so special? And like, because this is like a thing, but I've never done them, you know, and I've actually only run two marathons, but I've done marathons. But like what you're doing is like, it's like this other level of like achieving a goal.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point there, because my first marathon, my goal was to break 4 hours, which is an incredible goal for your first marathon. Like that's a very like lofty, like really, you know, so by the skin of my teeth, you know, ran just under 4 hours. And I think the perspective that you just kind of led with, that this was always a goal for me, right? Like I was never a competitive runner. I did not run in high school or college. So this was always just something that I was trying to better myself through. And I'm very competitive with myself, not with others. Like a woman could run past me in a race and I'd be like, good job. Like I don't mind getting beat. Like it's all like, if I'm giving the most that I can to a goal that I have, I'm satisfied. And I think that mentality that I've had this whole time I've been running has really benefited me, because it's never about anybody else. It's never about a time. It's always about like right now, what's the best that I can do?
Yeah.
And I'm always like very, very happy with that. Right. So I think that, you know, I just, you know, you work with endurance athletes. I think sometimes we get so caught up in breaking 3 hours or breaking 4 hours or BQing that we put all of our eggs in a time basket and we forget to have fun in the process. Mm-hmm. And it's like, to your point, I'm not an elite athlete. I'm not at all. I've gotten like one elite bib in my life and it was a local race, you know, so.
Which is very cool. Very cool.
We're doing this for fun. You know,
we're doing it for fun.
To be fun. Yeah. So if it's not fun, if we're putting too much stress and pressure on ourselves, it's like, what are we doing here? Right. Like this is not.
Yeah.
While it might look like it's part of my job, it's not. Right. Like my job is nutrition. This is the fun part that I enjoy as like perks of what I do. And one of those perks was getting a contract to finish the 6 world marathon majors. So so funny, because one of my first clients was training for the Tokyo Marathon. And I remember being like, no way, I wouldn't travel halfway around the world to run a marathon. That's so much stress. I don't know what food I'd be eating. Like, no, you know, so like old Megan was like, not about that. But as we get older, as we get wiser, as we learn more, you know, when this opportunity fell in my lap last year, I was like, of course, like this sounds amazing, you know, so there's 3 stateside races in it. So it's New York City, Chicago, and Boston. And then there's 3 overseas. So it's Berlin, Tokyo, and London. So once you complete all 6 of those, it's the Abbott World Marathon Majors Challenge, if you will, you get an extra medal that has those 6 circles on it that represents each marathon. And it's a huge time commitment. It's a huge financial commitment for most of us, you know. So it is something that a lot of people take a lot of pride in completing. So I have London left in 4 or 5 weeks. And then hopefully, right? It's never a given that we're going to cross that finish line. So the goal is...
It's not with a marathon. It's not a given. Yeah.
No, it never is. Never. Not until you cross that finish line. Not even at mile 24.
I know. Was there like was there a timeline, or is it just if you do all 6 of them, or is it like within, what's the timeline?
It was a year timeline, but I had already run Chicago. So I ran the other
6 marathons in a year is a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It was. So,
and with the travel to coordinate.
And that was part of it when I was like, oh yeah, I am interested in doing this. Cause part of it was me helping Abbott employee runners with their nutrition. So it was like, you know, mutually beneficial for all of us. So that was, I said, I'm like, what if something happens with my family, with me, and I can't complete this? You know, that was always on my mind, because it is a lot. It would have been last year. It was Boston, Berlin, New York. And then this year was Tokyo and London. So all of that within what, more like 18 months. And then I had Chicago from the year before. So it, I mean, that's,
yeah, it's a lot.
That's a decent. Yeah. Yeah.
It is. Yeah. And because this is something, you know, just maybe you had the incentive from Abbott Nutrition, but mm-hmm. other people chase that too. If I want to do the major yeah. ones, yes. you know, because and any marathon is an accomplishment, but those are the ones that you hear about. They've, you know, they've got the crowds, they've got the just everything. They've got everything. The support. I mean, I did a marathon once that was like, there were miles of like nobody. So, it was one of my, yeah, one of my marathons was miles of nobody. And so these major marathons are a totally different atmosphere. Completely
different.
It's a
party. Different. It's a party. 26.2 miles.
It's a party.
It's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, and maybe we'll just jump right to it. Actually, no, mm-hmm. I want to back. I'm going to back up. So yeah, you're a dietitian. You have that clinical experience. You've been marathoning for a decade now and achieving your goals and doing some really awesome, fun things with it, going across the world and all that. Throughout your journey as a dietitian and as a runner now, how would you just kind of like summarize your nutrition philosophy?
Yeah, that's a good question. And there's so many things going through my head right now. But I think adequately fueling our body for what we're expecting our body to do on a daily basis is mm-hmm. is what I is my bread and butter, right? You know, yeah. like understanding what are we expecting our body to do, which might be very different for every person, right? Person, athlete, who, no matter who we're looking at, and making sure that we're giving our body what it needs. I think you know this even more than I and your specialty that, you know, we are in a society that is constantly underfueling our body and expecting it to continue to perform, mm-hmm. right? And I just see that there is just this amazing opportunity to change that mentality around how we fuel our bodies when we insert running into the equation. So many people yeah. are willing to eat more, to eat different, to prioritize different things, to take more of a what can I add to my nutrition versus what can I subtract philosophy when we're mm-hmm. supporting our running. So sometimes that running piece is key to like hooking people to fueling their body better. So I think yeah. that's just my biggest mission. Sure, there's all sorts of subsets for performance that we can play with, but really helping people fuel their body for what they're expecting their body to do is definitely probably what I would say is my mantra around yeah. what I do on a daily basis. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's why I know you and I are generally speaking very aligned in our nutrition philosophies. And I love that. Yeah, running mm-hmm. and whatever sport it is can be your motivation sometimes because it's like, yeah, we're doing this for fun. We're doing this to mm-hmm. add something to our lives. So add in the nutrition piece and everything just kind of elevates from there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it kind of goes without saying anybody who knows you at all or follows you, you're also like the carb queen.
I am.
Graham cracker queen, bagel queen. So it's like, okay, we're going to fuel our bodies for what we're asking it to do. We're asking it to run marathons. So we're going to fuel up with our carbs and our graham crackers and our bagels. And that's certainly something that I love about you, the unapologetic carbs, 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 yep. which we have science to back that. Tons of science, even though society still tries to say, back off on the carbs. You're just like, no, no, more carbs, mm-hmm. more bagels. So I've seen some of your videos traveling, which I'd love to dive into now, as you traveled for these races, for New York, for Tokyo, mm-hmm. and how you're getting those carbs and how you're having graham crackers in the hotel room, how you're bringing bagels or New York City, obviously taking yeah. advantage of the bagels there. So I'd love to jump to that just kind of like with your recent big travels, Berlin and New York City. Actually, where are you from? I don't even know.
Ohio.
So, Ohio. Yeah, okay. Travel. So, yeah. So it was all travel. Yeah. No. So traveling to New York City, traveling to Tokyo, what were some of your personal like things that you had to do or tips that you had, things that really worked for you to make sure you, one, got your carbs in and two, were just fueling well to prepare you for race day while you're traveling?
Mm-hmm. And I always say, like, travel with anything you can't live without. So for me, that's graham crackers. Like, that's the only thing I ever eat before races. It's what I eat before all my runs, easy runs, long runs, workouts. So I always travel with two boxes of graham crackers when I'm going overseas because you can't find them over there. They're totally United States things.
Yeah.
Some places in Canada can get them, which I didn't know when I first started doing this. I just thought everybody had graham crackers, but they don't.
Yeah.
So I always, you know, if there's, again, something you cannot live without, like, no one could find bananas in Tokyo. Like, there was one 7-Eleven that had something that resembled a banana, but it was definitely not an American banana, right? So, yeah. like, people were freaking out, I can't find my bananas. So, not yeah. that we can travel abroad with bananas, but my point being, if there's something that we are used to, which we all say, you know, make sure we're practicing what we're going to eat before our race, let's yeah. make sure that we can take that with us so that we have it and we're not relying on chance of finding it, especially in another country. So, I always travel yeah.
Or I guess in the case of banana, sorry to interrupt, but it's like knowing that can help you then in your training practice with something mm-hmm. else. Maybe I need to start incorporating a different fruit or a different yeah. carb source pre-run since yeah. I might not have bananas on race day.
Yeah. Yeah. They almost looked like plantains. They were kind of square. They were really big. I wondered if they were going to be like really hard versus like a soft banana we're used to. So yeah, yeah. I was like, that's an interesting tidbit. I wouldn't have known.
Didn't know.
So yeah, I think that's a big thing. And then too, with traveling, you know, especially Tokyo was 14 hours ahead. So if I wouldn't have thought about, okay, when am I going to land? I would have missed an entire day of my carb load because I traveled mm-hmm. on quote unquote day three of my carb load, but that was day four in the United States. So it was like thinking ahead of like, what's this going to look like? And instead of like panicking, like, oh my gosh, I missed a day, you know, mm-hmm. it was like, okay, I need to be ahead. I need to be on their time. So sometimes it's thinking through time changes, food changes, you know, booking flights so that I knew I could go right to bed and try to flop onto their time, you know, just kind of some little logistics that, you know, I think really set me up to be able to have good races regardless of kind of where I was.
Yeah. So travel with the things you can't live without. Definitely plan ahead, thinking mm-hmm. about your carb load, when and how you're going to do that. So did you eat out at restaurants then? Did you pre-plan that before going or just, yeah. And how
I
much?
I didn't plan. Yeah.
You didn't. Okay.
Go ahead. How much? What?
I guess I was going to say like how much, because sometimes when you go to a new place, I personally love to experience the food culture, but how yeah. much did you enjoy the food culture versus I'm going to just stick with whatever I know and maybe after the race, enjoy the food culture?
I typically go that route mainly yeah. because, and you know, this is different for every runner, but I feel 100% of my race day nerves in my stomach. I don't yeah. feel nervous. All of a sudden, I'm like, my stomach hurts. And I'm like, oh, you're nervous. You know, mm-hmm. so I'm always very careful about, that's why I eat a lot of bagels and graham crackers, because they're just so easy on my stomach, you know. So I am a little bit careful ahead of time about what I'm going to eat. But I'm also, for as type A as I can be, I'm also very laid back with that travel piece. So I didn't really have anything planned of what I was going to do. I knew that they had some different like fast food marts there that I would have a lot of options. So I kind of explored those. And I did dine out and eat sushi two nights before the race. But then the actual day before the race, I really stuck to things I was used to. They had a bakery there, which I was shocked that actually had bagels and soft pretzels. So I stocked yeah. up and just kind of ate that stuff that was very familiar to me the day before the race. And then, yeah, after the race, we had some great, you know, Japanese food and tried a bunch great. Of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess the thing with these major marathons, they're in big cities where there's a variety of food. I mean, the food culture in Japan is extremely different, but you were in Tokyo, which, you know, it's got a lot of options. So I think that's something, you know, honestly, people going to marathons in like kind of smaller towns might have more limited options, and they might right. be the ones who need to plan ahead and be like, you know what, I'm going to bring this box of spaghetti with me and right. just in case and figure it out in the hotel or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
And I have a lot of athletes that'll get like an Airbnb specifically so they yeah. can make what they're used to eating the night before a race. And I love that. Or have their toaster in the morning if they need a toaster for something, you know. So yeah. we have so many options now, just depending on what we need as individual runners to set ourselves up for success.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a race. Oh, gosh. It was a long time ago now. Because it was before, I think it was like 2019. And like it was a trail race, a 20-mile trail race. And yeah, we had like a cottage. But there was only like one restaurant in the town. And so I was like, I'm not going to trust that. And I looked at the menu, but it was like, you know, steak, veggie, potato. I'm like, we're going to bring spaghetti. We're going to cook our own meal in this cottage and, you know, making pancakes the next morning and things like that, because it was just too risky in that small town. I wasn't going to trust the one restaurant. So,
right, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned like with Tokyo, you do a carb load. And I, as much as on this podcast, I promote carbs all the time, I don't think I've ever really dove into carb loading on a podcast episode before. So I think you're the perfect person to do it with. I'm just going to kind of ask you the basic questions for you to inform uh-huh. our audience. What is carb loading and what is the intended purpose of it?
Yeah. So we can store endless amounts of fat in our body, which we can use as a fuel source. And we can store carbohydrates in our body that we can use as a fuel source when we're running. But we have a very finite storage form for carbohydrates, which is called glycogen. So we can store glycogen in our muscles. We can store it in our liver. Our liver glycogen maintains our blood sugar. Our muscle glycogen is what we pull from to fuel our muscles when we're running. So, mm-hmm. you know, we often hear people say like, oh, I've got fat stores. I'll just use that. I don't need to carb load. But when we're looking at actual performance, performance and running intensity. The faster we're trying to run or the longer we're trying to hold like a higher intensity when we're running, the more we use carbohydrates. So carbohydrates are a very fast fuel. We can turn carbs into energy very, very quickly, and it spits out a lot of energy to us. But when we're converting fat into fuel, it's a very slow fuel source and we don't actually spit out as much fuel. So if we run out of carbohydrate stores, we're going to have to rely on fat for fuel, and then our pace slows and we quote unquote hit the wall. So we can hit the wall for multiple reasons. Like we go out too fast, we get dehydrated, or we run out of glycogen or carbohydrate availability. So if we really want to race a marathon distance or even a half marathon distance for a lot of us, depending on our time out there, we have to fully stock those glycogen stores in order to not run out of carbohydrates. So for most of us, if we fully carb load and lock and load those glycogen stores, we have about 12 to 13 miles we can run off of those stores. So then the rest of the time we need to be taking our gels and all those types of things, right?
During run
but
fuel.
Most of us can't get enough fuel in without those glycogen stores to maintain a certain performance. So, I mean, again, I use myself as a guinea pig, and I think of the times that I was able to perform equally well from mile one through mile 26, and it's when my iron stores are good and I'm fully carb loaded and I've taken all my gels, right? So like for me, those are the three keys to keeping my performance where it needs to be instead of dying the last 10K, instead of having to stop and walk, you know, instead of our pace dropping off a minute, 2-3 minutes per mile, which is so common in the marathon. So I think when I first started running marathons, like no one carb loaded, like no one. And I'm reading these research studies, like this can improve our performance by 7%. Why aren't people carb loading, right?
Yeah.
And then I would talk about it and I'd talk to my clients and like, no, I don't carb load. And I'm like, we need to do something about this. We need to carb load. So, you know, that kind of spurred, I felt like it was a opportunity that we weren't taking advantage of in the running world and that people weren't educated on. So very early, you know, in my sports nutrition career, I started, you know, talking about the benefits of carb loading and how we do that and the calculator on the website, because it can just be such a game changer, no matter our pace. I think that's a good thing to say too, is like, you don't have to be running a quote unquote fast marathon to benefit from carb loading. If we personally are trying to run a marathon at the best of our fitness ability for the whole time, carb loading will benefit that, right? Yeah. So it's just really remembering that if we want to have a good time out there and feel good mentally and physically, the more carbs we have on board, the better.
Yeah, so perfectly said. And I think so many people think like, well, my body can burn fat. But what you just reminded us is like, that's a slow process. Like, yeah, your body can do it. But if you're trying to have fun and feel good, and you know, you're an example of somebody who's brought your marathon time down like an hour or more, how do you do that? It's by like, you can burn fat if you want to, but you know, if you want to feel better, if you want to run faster, you want to bring your time down, no matter what that time is, carb loading is a method to help you do that. So,
right. And I think, you know, our body's preferred fuel source in our brain and our muscles is carbs. So like our brain's happier when we have carbs around, our muscles are happier when we have carbs around. So for most of us, you know, we're always going to burn some fat out there, right? I think that's a it's not like we're always burning 100% carbs, not at all, right? But we just don't have many stores of them. So we got to make sure the ones we do are full as we're starting.
Absolutely. And so recent research is showing that a 3-day carb load is sufficient for marathoning. That's what you do and what you recommend to your clients as well?
I do. Yeah. So a lot of research is a 1-day carb load. Some of it's a 2-day carb load, but that is a ton of carbs to consume in 1 or 2 days. It's just no one could do it. So that's why I typically recommend a 3-day carb load, just because it's more feasible for most of us. We can. There's no time limit on a carb load. We could carb load for a week if that, you know what I mean? It's the process of it. It's not time, you know, limited, but it's just what I've found works the best for people is focusing for those 3 days on it, because then we don't have to take too much. We're not focusing on it for too long, you know? So that's kind of the sweet spot that I've personally found with people.
Yeah. So we'll direct people to your website where there's a very easy carb loading calculator that, you know, will tell you if you're going to do a 3-day carb load, this is the amount in grams that your body requires. How many people do your calculator or work with you one-on-one and are just like, there's no way I can eat that much, and just like kind of floored, like, because it's such a big number for so many people.
Yeah. And I do. I get DMs about it. I get emails about it. I get,
Like, no way that's that much. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I was hesitant, honestly, to put any type of calculator on my website because every calculator has nuances, right?
Right,
and as a sports dietitian, I'm like, but this, for this person, it might not be right. For that person, it might not be right. And I took a step back and I was like, if it's benefiting most people, this is a win.
Yeah.
But glycogen stores are in our muscles, right? So if somebody's total body weight is significantly more than actual muscle mass for your height, it might way overestimate carbs. So I always tell people, like, there's a caveat on there. If it's more than 800 grams of carbs a day, reach out. I will help you. You know,
I saw that caveat.
Yeah, like help people adjust. Or if they've struggled to do it in the past, we take a look and find out, like, do we need this much? You know, if you have a really high carb day-to-day diet, maybe we don't need that much. So there's certainly nuances in it. But for most people, it is an eye opener of like, oh, I need more because so many of us are undercarbed. Yeah.
And what I've done with clients too is my calculation might say, okay, you need 600 grams of carbohydrate, but I know that they've, you know, been struggling and they're only at like 250, 300. I'm like, well, this is a carb load, you know, so it's supposed to be more than your usual, but I might even just help them work up to that. Like, okay, well, let's try 400 on day one and day two. And so, you know, so you can absolutely, there's nuances, you can individualize it. Mm-hmm. But I think just that eye opener, just for people to learn, this is actually what research has shown is helpful. Mm-hmm. To complete a marathon, to carb load for 3 days, this is the amount, in a ballpark amount, that my body would need.
Right.
Yeah. What about the biggest concern that people have typically with carb loading is just kind of gaining weight in those 3 days, water retention, feeling heavy on race day morning? What are your tips on how to prevent that heaviness feeling, or is that to be expected and you're going to run great with it anyways?
Yeah. So I think taking a step back and like we talked obviously about carb loading and glycogen storage, but like what is glycogen, right? It's for every gram of carb that we store, it's like 3 or 4 grams of water with that carb. So as we're storing glycogen, we're hanging on to extra fluid. So for very, you know, body attuned runners, you're going to feel that, right? Like, of course, you're going to feel that your body is hanging on to some extra fluid. So some people find that a little bit uncomfortable. What I have found is most people maybe by the end of the day start to feel a little uncomfortable and then they wake up the next day and they're fine. You know, that's how it probably should transpire is, we're eating a little bit more. We might feel a little more swollen at bedtime, full, right? Mm-hmm. And then in the morning, we should feel good. Now, for people who really don't tolerate carb loading, what I typically find is on a daily basis in their training, they were way undercarbed. So it's like the jump, right, to a carb load from where they were is just their body's like, what the heck are you doing? So sometimes, like you had just said, we'll scale back and we won't even try to hit those numbers. And then in the off season, we try to get our carb needs where they need to be. So next time we can carb load a little better.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, there certainly are people who are worried about feeling bloated, their weight increasing, which if we carb load correctly, it should. It should. Yeah. We should have more water. We should have more carbs. It's not fat, but, you know, I always tell people, stay on the scale. Do not get on the scale when you're carb loading, you know?
And ultimately, too, is that's a little extra hydration.
Yeah.
Like, that's helpful when you're about to run a marathon, too. So it's okay.
Exactly.
You know, if you think that this extra weight is extra fuel and extra hydration, it's not, so many people get concerned, is this extra weight going to slow me down? No, this is exactly what's going to fuel your performance better with the extra carbs and extra hydration.
And I think one of the coolest things about all this is like, because that is a free resource, I don't know who's using it. I can look at numbers of how many people have accessed the page, but I don't know who's using it. So I'll get, you know, around big marathons, just DMs about, I had a 42-minute PR. I had a 16-minute PR. I qualified for Boston, 10 minutes off my PR. And all of them are saying like, this carb load was a game changer. I wasn't sure about it in the beginning, but it works. It really, truly works, especially for somebody who's never done it before. And it just makes me so happy and, you know, smiling that people are taking advantage of the science that's out there and changing their things and changing their misconceptions on how we should be fueling for that start line. We don't want to be empty and feeling our lightest, right? We want to be fully fueled. So it's cool to see, you know, some of those like one-off successes.
That must be so rewarding and like, even if when you don't know somebody, but just to know that you helped them on their day, you know, achieve that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I think when I talk to clients about carb loading too, we do want to be mindful to not just consume excessive calories, not to be afraid of excessive calories, but, you know, as we're increasing carbs, sometimes we're decreasing some fats and protein at the same time, because I don't want them to be just like stuffed. That's not a good feeling for anybody. Right. And I think that's where people really get stuck, honestly. Carb loading is like, you know, we talk about making these balanced plates, and then on the carb load, it's like, no, like you can really, you don't need the meatballs with your pasta today, or like you can if you want like one, but like you don't need that. And I think that's a really difficult shift for people. Do you have any like tips or like how do you kind of approach that of like decreasing the fat, decreasing the protein a little bit to make this more feasible to get in the carbohydrates that they need?
And that's another good point, because a lot of people will be like, I can't possibly eat this much. And then like, okay, what are you eating? And they're like, I had a cookie, a donut, a croissant. And I'm like, okay, those are 50% carbs, 50% fat. So fat keeps us full. So of course we're feeling overly full. So I'll instead be like, okay, why don't we do pretzels and a bagel and things that are more carbs, less fat and protein, so that we can get the amount in and not, like you're saying, not feel too full. And then I have other people, it's usually guys, that eat their carbs and they're starving. And I'm like, okay, put your protein and fat back in. Like, so some people need to keep that in. But I would say the majority of people have to, like, I keep some protein in, but I scale back, definitely scale back protein and definitely scale back fat, just to make sure I'm making room for all the carbs.
I've done a carb load, I think, maybe four times in my life, for the two marathons and then a couple long distance trail races. And I think I did it for, I think I've done it for my half marathons as well. Mm-hmm. Kind of forgetting now. But anyways, because it's been a couple years since I've raced seriously. But I am somebody that I'm good until like by day three, I am hungry.
Yeah.
By day three of the lower fat and lower protein, I'm like hungry, which is good, because I'm like, I'm hungry, I want to go eat another bagel. I'm hungry, I want to go eat rice. But I found that it's on day three, I'm like, I'm going to put a little protein in here, because I actually, I feel the hunger.
Yeah.
So yeah, everybody's different.
Yeah. And I've noticed too, it's kind of, it's changed over my last 10 years too. Like, I remember the first time I carb loaded, I think I ate an entire like package of Peeps, like the three pack. So that was like 200 grams of straight sugar. And I felt great. Yeah. If I eat like straight sugar in a carb load now, I feel like I get like sweaty. Like, I feel like my blood sugar is like, no, this isn't what we do. Do you know what I mean?
So
like, even throughout the years, I think our body responds differently to things sometimes. And it's like, if I eat a bagel, I feel fine. But if I ate a whole package of Peeps, I don't feel that great. So you know, the lesson there is like, eat the foods you're comfortable with, you already eat. We don't need to be throwing in a bunch of carbs that our body's not used to eating.
Yeah.
Just eat more of the things that you already enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Very cool. Okay. I feel like that was a good deep. Any other things you want to say about carb loading? I feel like that was a good deep dive.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So if you're heading it, you're a marathoner interested in marathoning and you've never carb loaded before, it works. Check out Megan's on carb loading calculator on her website. Very easy to find. Another gadget that you, or calculator that you have on your website, is a hydration calculator. Kind of talking through, I think, actually sweat rate. Like, when you go on a run, how much do you sweat? And we have a method of doing that where you step on a scale, you weigh yourself before a run, after a run, and whatever fluid you lost or whatever weight you lost is a reflection of sweat loss, of fluid loss. But more recently, you had a post about this on social media too. There's a lot of gadgets out there to track your hydration. And I told you, this is something I have very little knowledge on. I just personally haven't had an interest in diving into it. And I guess my clients, nobody's challenged me to it yet, I guess. So I just haven't. Yeah. But you've done some experimentation with some hydration gadgets. You mentioned in your Instagram post just some brand names: H-Drop, Levelin, NYX, Precision Hydration. Could you just share with us, what are these hydration gadgets? What do they claim to do? Let's start there.
Yeah. So I think, like, we've kind of the underlying theme of this whole episode is like, we try things because we need to try things. And I'm a very heavy sweater, and I was not training well through the first summer that I was trying to get back into marathoning after I had kids. And I was like, it's got to be hydration. Like, I'm missing something. It's either sodium, it's fluid, like the headaches, the fatigue. I was like, this is not normal, right? So that's where I started diving more, like the personal interest at first, into the whole hydration thing. And so our sweat loss, like how much we sweat, and our sweat composition, how much salt is in our sweat, is genetic. So we're born sweaty, we're born salty, you know, it just, it is what it is. There's not much we can do to change it. I look at my son and I'm like, he's got my sweat genes. He is, I call him a sweat hog. Like, he's soaked when he comes out of school at the end of the day, because he's just had gym in the middle of winter.
Okay. That's my newest baby. That's him too. He's sweating all the time. I'm like, he's just hot, hot right? all the time.
And, you know, that's a question I always ask my runners. Like, when you're in a group, are you the sweaty one? And yeah. that's just a great way to identify, like, yes, that's me. Or no, not really. You know, and then that tells me a world of information, right? So for people who are on that edge of, yes, I'm always the sweatiest one. My eyes sting because there's sweat going into them, and or I see those visible salt lines on my body, or I have terrible GI issues because I sweat so much, or I'm getting cramps at the end of marathons because I'm so sweaty. You know, all of those things trigger me to be like, okay, we might need to look into sweat rate, sweat composition. Whereas there, like you're saying, there's a lot of runners who might not need to look into it. Just sipping on an electrolyte drink for their runs might be plenty, right? But for people who have these bigger losses, we have to be really intentional about what we're doing before, during, after. So for those people, we have some options. So you mentioned the calculator that's the sweat rate. So that honestly, for me, has been just very eye-opening for clients, or again, for people that are just popping on my website and using it to be like, wow, I lose 50 ounces of fluid an hour in the summer.
Yeah.
But that just can be this like aha moment for somebody to start making those changes.
Yep.
So I think it's more of an awareness tool, honestly, the calculator. And then of course, like myself or you could really help someone dive into a plan if we knew that sweat rate.
And I, if I can add in quickly, I've lived in a couple different states. Like I grew up in Massachusetts and then I moved to Florida and then Georgia and Texas, and the different humidities, the different climates, I found it very useful to track my sweat rate using the scale just to learn, you know, what am I sweating at Texas in the summer versus Texas in the winter? Two very different things. And then again, I grew up in Massachusetts. So it was my first time when I moved to Florida, and the humidity in Florida was insane. An 80 degree day summer in Massachusetts versus 80 degree day in Florida, two completely different sweat rates and experiences. So this is a, if you're comfortable stepping on the scale, this is a very eye-opening tool. And I would encourage people to do it during different seasons, for sure, you know, winter versus summer, or indoor versus outdoor. If you're a treadmill runner versus an outdoor runner, you could have different sweat rates with the environment as well. So kind of learning your body in the different seasons and stuff like that could be helpful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Like knowing my sweat rate in the summer versus for a fall marathon when it's cold, drastically different hydration strategies, right? So like understanding, like I don't need the amount of fluid for a November marathon that I needed over the summer, you know, and being able to adjust that can be really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with all of that.
Yeah. So sorry, I cut you off. Yeah.
Oh, no, you're fine. So that's our, how much we're losing, but then we can also look at our composition. So like how much. So we lose a lot of electrolytes in sweat, as you know, but the main one is sodium. The one we lose in the highest amount is sodium. The one that can negatively impact performance is sodium. So I typically often just talk about the sodium loss from a sweat.
The other ones we can fill in,
right?
But the sodium we have to focus on.
Right, right, correct. And you know, we'll usually get the rest through our diet, but sodium can be a limiter for a lot of people. So the sweat composition test that you just mentioned would test how salty of a sweater we are. So when I first was looking into this, I was like, can someone do this for me at home? Right. So I found, you know, back in, I think it was 2017, the Levelin, which is a company out of Pennsylvania that sends you a little gauze patch and you literally tape it to your arm. You go for a run, you put it in a test tube and you send it back to them, and they spin down your sweat and they look at how much you lost. So you'll weigh in and out around it. And they analyze what the composition of your sweat is and then extrapolate that to how much sweat you actually lost from your weigh-in. And it's a very accurate way, you know, like with research, we do like a full body sweat washdown in a laboratory, which we can't do, right? So it's extrapolating how we sweat on our forearm to the rest of our body, which is the best, in my knowledge, the best correlation, right? Like how much we lose on our forearm for most people. Yeah.
Forearm to body. Okay. Yeah. Like that's one question I had with these things was location. I'm like, I sweat more in my, like, what about armpits versus, you know,
right.
So forearm, there's research to say forearm location is a pretty good correlation to whole body.
It is.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So, and I got to know one of the guys who works for Level. And so I would question, like when I was first getting into this, I'd like send him questions all the time about this, because I did have a couple athletes that tried it that didn't sweat on their arm. And he says there are like rare occasions. So we had, he would like instruct them of someplace else to put it. So, I mean, you know, all of us are different. But so then they send you a report of like how much sodium you lose per liter of sweat. So that's how I first analyzed kind of where I was at. So that's a really good like clinical way to do it. then another way that's similar to that is precision hydration. But precision hydration, you have to actually physically go to a location that has the device. So that's the limiter with that one. It's very, you know, science validated. Like, you know, it's a great tool. You get very accurate information from both that and Levelin. But like I said, that precision hydration, I think you can get on their website. There's one in Ohio. Some states don't have any. Yeah. You know, they're often with a university or a sports clinic. So that one you actually don't have to run. You just sit down and they put electrodes on your forearm and they stimulate your sweat glands and then they extrapolate all of it out. So it's a little different than how they collect Levelin, but still very like valid results, right?
Yeah.
And then the wearable generation, right? Now we're to this point where we all want wearables that are reusable, that hook to our phone. So sweat has jumped into that now. So we have two like reusable wearables. So there's H-Drop and then there's the Nyx. So both of those you can use as many times as you want. There's an app that connects to them. Obviously, neither of those are going to be as accurate the former two. Right. So I think there's still a pretty decent learning curve with both of those. H-Drop is on their second generation.
Okay.
I used their first generation a lot and I thought it was comparable. Like I thought it was fairly comparable to my Levelin results. I have to be honest, I've got their second generation, but it's been so cold here. I'm like, I haven't tried it. I'm just not sweating enough. So I need to try the second generation. And then the Nyx, we actually went on a hydration tour this summer and we went to the hottest. That's why I was laughing because we went to like everywhere I used to live, Texas and Florida and Atlanta and like all the hot places.
Very difficult places to run in. Yeah.
Oh my God. I was so happy to go home to Ohio. I was like, I will never take for granted summer training in Ohio again. I was like, this is lovely compared to other places. But so we wore the Nyx at that one. And I mean, I have to be honest, I had a lot of issues with it connecting and not gathering great data. So we talked to some of the people from their corporation and they have an amazing app in the background. Like it'll like categorize stuff. So like you were just saying about certain locations or certain weather, it like categorizes and helps you come up with a plan. So like in the background, I love what they have going on, but at least on me, the device was not working very well.
Yeah.
So I think there might need to be some kinks worked out or it was user error. I don't know.
Yeah. Or just, you could have been the anomaly or whatever, you know, that percentage that just doesn't work for. Yeah.
Right. So there's options if people want to look into it. It's just, do you want something that's reusable that might not be quite as accurate? Or do you want like gold standard data, you know, that then you can, and once you have that data, our sweat composition isn't going to change. We just extrapolate those numbers to how much we're actually sweating.
Losing. So like, when you,
So it's like, it's good data. It's not like that's going to change. It's just some people, you know, like the app and like seeing it in your face, drink this, replace this, you know, so it's just kind of a different way to use it.
So you've gotten to, you know, you've studied the science behind it, met with the companies and tried it on yourself. Do you have many clients and athletes that use these products as well?
I do. I don't recommend them for everyone. I don't think everyone needs. I think we have too many gadgets right now, honestly.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, we can track anything. So, but I do think there's some people that need that, that need to truly understand. I've had a big handful of clients that have another health condition, like you were mentioning at the beginning, that have had like a pretty significant cardiac event at a young age that are scared to eat sodium. So if I can say like, this is what you're losing an hour, let's pair 800 milligrams of sodium an hour. And once they see their sweat, they're like, oh my gosh, I do need that. But until then, they're bonking on runs. They're not recovering because they needed more sodium. So sometimes we need that data to convince ourselves of what we need and to buy into the plan. So sometimes I'll use it for that. Some people just love gadgets. Some people are having terrible GI issues, cramping. And again, they're just scared to, we can tinker with sodium and throw more at it and see what happens, which I'm totally fine doing with clients. But some people really want the data and they want to know how much am I losing? So I know how much to take. End of story, moving on, you know, so it just kind of depends on the person's personality.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think it's really eye opening for athletes, especially in an endurance event like a marathon and in different weather conditions, to see how much sodium that they're losing. Because those numbers can get real high. Mm-hmm. But when you go and pick up a, you know, electrolyte packet or something that's like, oh, this is 1,000 milligrams of sodium. That number can be kind of scary high if you don't have the confidence that, oh no, I'm losing 3,000 or 4,000 milligrams. Like, okay, that makes sense now. But when so much information around us is saying lower your sodium, it can be kind of scary to add this 800 milligram or 1,000 milligram supplement to your diet. So I think that's helpful. And something I'd like to ask you too, whether in your work, your experience as a dietitian and marathoning is like, you know, we know the risks of dehydration are severe. Also of whether we want to call it hyponatremia or water intoxication, where you're taking in water but not enough electrolytes, life-threatening, very severe, and a concern in marathons. So as we're trying to prevent that, we're trying to stay on top of our hydration, stay on top of our electrolytes. Have you ever come across people who are actually consuming too much sodium? And what would kind of signs or symptoms be of that or harms of that?
Yeah. I've only ever had two clients that have gotten into pretty severe trouble with drinking too much water and not taking in enough sodium.
Okay.
And both of them, same, were kind of scared of the sodium piece. So they were just sweating out all the sodium. And then again, like you're saying, we're almost diluting the sodium in our blood when all we're taking back in is water. And it's very risky. Like it can end up in coma. Like it's not great, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't see it that frequently. But when you look at the research, the people that we tend to see it in the most are kind of the back of the pack runners that are drinking to a plan instead of drinking to thirst. So people who are out there for longer, that are maybe running a little more slowly, that maybe do have a higher sweat rate, and all they're drinking is water on course.
Yeah.
So there was a big push to like not always overdrink while we're out there, and to always make sure that there's some sodium in it. And then two is you never want to gain weight while you're running a race, right? That means you're taking in way too much water. So not that, you know, there's that many people weighing in and out after marathons, but they've done some studies looking at who was at risk of hyponatremia, and it was the people whose weight was equal or higher than where they started at.
Would that be reflected, like if somebody is concerned as they're running that they're like, I'm not feeling good, but I'm drinking all this water and I've been on the course for 5+ hours, like would they be able to feel that maybe with like swelling of their fingers or something like that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that might be kind of an indicator.
One of the swelling of your hands can be water intoxication or lack of sodium.
Yeah.
So like it could be like it could be either of those. But one of the things that I've found with people who are like borderline, and I've experienced it myself, is a little bit of confusion. Like you're out on a run and you're like, where am I? Like confusion, getting lost, right? Of like, how far have I gone? Not being able to calculate like a pace in your mind, you know, things like just a little bit of disorientation, a little bit of dizziness, a little bit of confusion. That's like the early signs of, you know, hyponatremia or not getting enough sodium in when we're losing it. And it can be scary. It really can. So there's all the medical professionals at the end of marathons are trained in symptoms of hyponatremia. And I've talked to some of them before, and they're like, it's a certain look, it's a certain agitation, it's a certain delirium and confusion that we always know, get them off, get them some broth, check their serum sodium, and like intervene as soon as possible. So I know there's definitely some signs that medical folks look for.
Yeah. And what about the opposite? Is too much sodium during a race a concern for people?
I get that question all the time. And I honestly still don't have an amazing answer because we don't have studies on that.
Yeah.
And I've never had someone oversalt in a race. Like it's
me neither. Covered. I've had, not relating to a race, but in my experience working with athletes, I've had one athlete have too much sodium in her diet where actually she was developing some problems with her kidneys, and we worked through that because she was having all these crazy symptoms and it came down to the seasoning that I did not realize she was dousing every single food on top of being an athlete. And like I was like, you're taking in good electrolytes, but I didn't know about this seasoning.
Good detective work.
It took a long time, honestly. I was upset with myself that it took so long to figure it out, but anyways, that's one in how long have I been diet? Like 13 years being a dietitian. I've had one athlete consuming too much sodium. And so I haven't seen it either. And so that's the thing. Like, again, these people might see a packet of electrolytes that's 1,000 milligrams of sodium and think that's too much. And it's like, no, you are sweating a lot. You're losing a lot during this race, during everyday training. And in 13 years, I've seen one athlete consume too much.
And I think, you know, you bring up a really good point because we do have a lot of really high sodium supplements all of a sudden, just over the past couple of years, you know, 1,000 milligrams, 1,700 milligrams. So the potential is there, right?
Yeah.
For people to overconsume. And the biggest thing I always tell people is like, if we're not sweating, scale it back. Like over the winter, if you're not sweating much, drop scale those. Back. But in the summer, scale them back up and we're going to be okay. You know, like I think it's pretty easy to overthink it sometimes.
Yeah. And I found too, when it comes to GI issues, very common in the endurance events like the marathon, as well as recovery, even muscle recovery, we our minds go to protein and carbohydrates. But I have found that adding more sodium will change the game with your muscle recovery. And then, of course, with reducing GI issues as well.
Especially afterwards, like the nausea, the diarrhea that happen after a run or a race. I'm like, get some sodium in, salty pretzels, drink some water, more electrolytes, you know, find something, because it almost always shuts down that nausea so that then you can eat and really begin to recover.
Yeah. So real quick, because we're coming up on time here, but one of your recent Instagram posts said 50 to 70% of runners have experienced upper GI discomfort while racing, nausea, vomiting, cramps, sloshing. And so as we just discussed, one of those reasons is probably a lack of sodium or an electrolyte imbalance. Mm-hmm. What are kind of your top reasons for if you're a runner experiencing GI issues, look into like these top two, three or four things? What would that be?
So if it's lower GI issues, I always electrolytes, sodium. Like how are we going into these runs dehydrated is always like a box to check. The other one is how much fiber are we eating? So again, if we're living this healthy lifestyle and we're like, I have to eat all whole grains and all these beans and lentils that are high in iron and I have to have vegetables at every meal. There's just too much left over at our GI tract and our GI tract speeds up when we're running and it's got to go somewhere, you know? Yeah. So sometimes
it's going to go out.
We look into. Right. And then too fueling. So if we run fasted, we're more likely to have GI issues. If we're trying to fuel, but our body's not used to it, maybe we need to slow down and like slowly introduce fuel into our body. So, you know, looking through all those things are important. And then as far as like upper GI issues, like the nausea, the sloshing, I have found that one's a little trickier to identify and it takes a little more digging to understand. Sometimes it's acid reflux that we need to treat. You know, sometimes it's what have we eaten too much fat before and our stomach's just not emptying? Do we have delayed gastric emptying? Do we need to look at a different fuel? So the upper GI stuff's a little bit trickier, but the lower stuff is usually hydration, daily nutrition, and then fueling around a run.
Absolutely. And I think relating to the upper GI, I think I saw you mention somewhere about like starting your run too fast. Can that relate to some like cramping stuff too? And I know in my past, see, I grew up in college, I was a sprinter and then I transitioned into distance running.
Yeah.
And I, for a period of time, had a bad habit of like, I'm just going to go out and do a quick 2 miles, but I would like go out like as if it was like a sprint. And like within half a mile, I had massive cramps. And I think you're just going out too fast because I had that like sprinter mindset of just like go real quick. Not respecting this, still 2 miles, like take it easy. Yeah. You know, this isn't a 400 meter.
Yeah. No, that's a good point.
And I experienced that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when our perceived exertion is higher, we have less blood flow to our GI tract, right? We're trying to get more oxygen to our muscles. So it's like we divert blood away from our GI tract, which can cause nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, cramping in our GI tract, all that kind of stuff. So I have had some people that I've worked with for a long time, our fuel plan was like tried and true. And then they have issues on race day. And I've almost always been able to track it back to they went out too hard or the conditions meant that the pace they thought wasn't going to be hard was hard, right?
Yeah.
Whether weather, too hot, things like that. So I do perceived exertion for whatever reason, you know, heat, excessive sweat loss, wind, that kind of stuff can really play a role in that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that I learned that one on a personal level because it's like you said, it's like, wait, the nutrition is perfect. It was actually something else because at that time I was like, what am I doing wrong with my hydration or what I'm eating? And it was like, nope, you just gotta go a little slower. Yeah. Going out for a 400 meter dash here when I'm trying to run 2 miles, like I'm slow down.
Yeah.
Megan, this was really fun. And I'm glad we got, I absolutely with the hydration stuff, I personally learned a lot just there. So thank you for that. I always end every podcast episode with some fun questions. You ready?
Let's do it.
It's been fun the whole time, but some more fun questions. If there's one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life, what would it be? Oh, and never get sick of it. Never get sick of it.
Oh, toast.
Toast.
Mm-hmm.
You got lots of fun toppings for your toast.
I love toast. I love toast. I eat toast multiple times every day. I'm very passionate about toast.
Awesome. Great. Seems obvious, but you never know. What's your favorite sport to participate in?
Oh, it's definitely running. Oh, I love running so much.
And the marathon specifically, does that have your heart?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. I try to convince myself I want to love other things, but it's definitely the marathon.
Just the marathon, yeah. Mm-hmm. How about as a spectator, what's your favorite sport to watch?
Ooh, this one's changing because my kids are doing so many new sports that I like keep falling in love with new things. I love watching basketball all of a sudden. I never thought I would say it, but swimming, I'm like so proud of these little devils for getting in that pool and swimming all by themselves. So I've enjoyed that. So, I mean, honestly, like, of course, I would travel to spectate a marathon any day. So, you know, that's always a peak interest. But basketball and swimming are getting up there.
Cool. Yeah. I'm learning as a mother now myself, anything your kids do is going to be one of your top favorite activities.
We just love them so much.
Yeah. Okay. And final question. If there's a female athlete out there you want to give a shout out to either in your personal life or super well known just for being an inspiration or a role model for any reason, who would that be and why?
Oh, I don't even have to hesitate at this one. It would be Meg Murray, who I do Fuel for the Soul podcast with, and she's my coach and I've helped her with her nutrition. And there rarely in life do you find someone that is so synergistic with you and that you work so well with, and you're a better person when you're around them and everything you do together is better. And, you know, I just think that she on so many levels, work level, training level, running level, friendship level, like it's just, we're quite a duo and appreciate her a lot.
Yeah. Megan, it was meant to be.
Megs.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This was so fun.
It was fun. Thanks for having me.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie. Please go check them out and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide, or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new coaches toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.